Hey everyone, Evan Damerill here, co-host of Locked On Cavs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. On today's episode, we're back with more Locked On Cavs Under the Bubble. This time around, we're joined by Ty Windish, Jordan Christmas, and Billy Reinhardt to talk about the Bucks, Sixers, and Nets respectively and their overall bubble experience. So, without further ado, strap in, strap on, and prepare for the ride of your life. This is Locked On Cavs Under the Bubble.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
Joining me now is host of the Eurostep podcast, Wisconsin Herd reporter, and my good friend, Ty Windish. Ty, how are you doing today, my man?
Better now. You know, I'm very, very happy to be here on Locked On Cavaliers, the premier Cleveland Cavaliers podcast. So honestly, never better, man. How are you?
You know, I can't complain, all things considered. It's weird to think that we're in the middle of a global pandemic. And just for those listening, I didn't pay Ty off to say that about Locked On Cavs. It's truly a, it means a lot for you to say that. But
I had to. I truly, if you know all the dynamics, I just had to.
I appreciate that, man. I mean, I have to put on my Eurostep shirt now after this. I mean, I just have to just burn any Chase Down memorabilia or paraphernalia I have. But as we all know, the Cavs were not invited to the Disney bubble experience, but the Bucks were, and they are arguably the best team in the NBA this year. And Ty, in your opinion, how have the Bucks looked so far under the bubble?
I honestly think they've looked terrific. I basically have blown out both teams. The Kings made it close in game two, but the Bucks were done playing important guys pretty early in the second half. And the Kings kept, obviously these games don't matter, but they need to be ready to fight for every single minute in these seeding games to even have a chance for the postseason. So they were trying a lot harder than Milwaukee, obviously, who really could go 0-8 and probably still finish with the first seed, but realistically win one game and they got that wrapped up because they have such a huge lead. But they've looked awesome. The thing that really stood out to me is every single player really who's played looks like they kept themselves in phenomenal shape, both physically and like game shape. Looks like some of the new guys, especially Marvin Williams, the newest guy, looks like he's really been studying up and he fits in better than ever. His shot looks good. And Chris and Giannis both look phenomenal. Chris looks as good as I've ever seen him, even if all of his shots aren't falling. Just physically, like, he's driving the ball more than ever. He really looks like the premier option I've always wanted to see. So I am ecstatic, if you can't tell, about how the Bucks have looked through two scrimmage games.
No, for sure. And I know the Bucks aren't really at full health or at the moment, but do you think that's really going to be like a continuity issue, or you feel okay even with the eight or so scrimmages? I mean, eight or so actual meaningful games and then the handful of time maybe Milwaukee has left. Do you think the Bucks are really sweating it, or they're just kind of getting ready for the playoffs? So this is just more of like a practice run for them for the next few weeks.
It's definitely a practice run. My thing has been they basically get the three scrimmages, then eight more games that might as well be scrimmages, and then they get four more games that might as well be scrimmages against whether it's Brooklyn or Washington or even Orlando if they somehow don't move up to seven. The Bucks haven't lost to any of those teams all season. I don't think they're going to start now. They're all, I think, except maybe the Magic, they're all down some significant personnel. Obviously, Washington and Brooklyn are. So They're in no rush. I mean, they honestly have played Giannis and Chris more than I expected. I think that's going to continue tonight as we're recording on Monday night, not to give away too much. You can edit that out if you need to.
No, you're good, man.
But they look great. And, like, they're missing regular season as well. Dante DiVincenzo steps right up. Obviously, you got Chris, you got Giannis, the two All-Stars, two soon-to-be All-NBA guys, one clearly, and Giannis, reigning MVP, about to be two-time. They can survive without Eric Bledsoe. You know, it doesn't throw out their offense. This isn't like the 80s. You're not having the point guard bring the ball up and initiate every set. He's more, especially on offense, more of a tertiary player. So They've been just fine without him. And honestly, it's probably good if they learn to get some reps without him. We all know he's had some struggles in the playoffs. If they have to play without him for strategic reasons at any point, they'll have some experience in doing so.
Oh, that makes absolute sense. And I mean, I guess on the bigger picture thing, like Milwaukee does have this luxury where they can let some other guys miss time and still be okay. But historically, this Milwaukee team is great. And that's saying a lot, especially considering how good this Bucks squad was last year. So I guess in your opinion, do you think anything short of a championship would be a disappointment for the Bucks this year?
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair to say. I mean, obviously, like you said, with how good they've been, one of the best net ratings in all of NBA history, not just recent history, certainly this season, they're far and away number one, best record in the league. I mean, if they fall in like six or seven in a tightly contested series to one of the LA teams, I don't think it would be like a glaring disappointment. I think those two teams are both very worthy competitors and I could see any of the three winning the championship. Mm-hmm. Quite honestly, I have for a while, after some doubt during the layoff, now that I've seen them back again, I still do believe the Bucks are the best team in the league and they will win the title, but I don't think it's 100% chance. Those other two teams have some pretty good forwards, mm-hmm. and forward centers. So, and obviously like LeBron and Kawhi are both guys we've seen win championships, not by themselves, but certainly be the driving force. We haven't seen Giannis do that yet. I think that it will change, but so I think those, like losing to one of those teams in a good competitive series, I think you're disappointed, but you're not like utterly dejected. If they lose like in the East at all in a series, I think that is an utter failure. I mean, they're no disrespect even. And the Raptors people love to follow me and listen to my stuff and get mad. No disrespect. They're a good team. The Celtics are good. The Heat are good. The Sixers, whatever. they exist too. But I just, like, they're not as good. It's not the same level. They're not there yet. Those other teams are all a little bit, they just come up short. They don't have a guy close to the level of Giannis. I just don't think you can compete with a team this good if you don't even have a guy like that to start with. I think you need more than just that. You need the cast around them, but you need the guy to start with. They just don't have it. I just think if they come up short and lose any of those teams, barring any, you know, wild extenuating circumstances, that's definitely a failure.
No, I absolutely agree. I think having some time away and then watching the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Bucks back in action, I still feel fairly confident in my bet that the Bucks are going to win it all. But I guess also in the grand scheme of things, do you believe, I know you and I have talked about this before, and you and I both talk about this often, and I rib you about this just, you know, to get under your skin about Giannis leaving, but you think he's going to stay. But do you think a championship locks up, even if it is an abridged championship or a weird one in Disney? Do you think that locks up more or less that Giannis is going to stay in Milwaukee for the long term future? Or do you think if the Bucks somehow, God forbid, get bounced in the Eastern Conference playoffs, or if they lose in the finals, that just kind of opens up all speculation for where Giannis could be heading after this?
Yeah, it would definitely open up the speculation. I mean, the story that came out as soon the minute they lost in the Eastern Conference Finals that Giannis took great exception to was that if they don't at least make the finals this year, he's out. I don't think it's that arbitrary and that simple for him. I think a lot goes into it. But the things he's repeated over and over, and what's funny, too, about the reaction to that article in particular by Malika Andrews, who's a terrific, respected journalist at ESPN, who's But Malika Andrew does great work. Shout out to her. No disrespect. Some of Buck's Twitter is still a little upset about that article, I think. But it wasn't the first time there's been like some talk about Giannis potentially leaving. He himself has said before, like, he wants to win. And he, like, his family is important to him. Loyalty is important to him. But he wants to be one of the greats. He wants to win. I mean, he idolized Kobe Bryant. So I think the biggest thing the Bucks can do to keep him around is show that they can be competitive and build a very competitive team around him. Mm-hmm. They have done that. Winning a championship obviously is the ultimate proof of that. And then the loyalty thing, I mean, no disrespect to him. He's a great guy, but Tanasis Atetokounmpo is on the roster. I'm sure if Giannis really wanted him to join, Costa Atetokounmpo would join as well. We'll see what Alex does after he's done playing overseas. The absolute funniest thing to me is people talking about the Lakers getting a leg up because they signed Costas. Like, I don't think if there's a Tetacumbro super team, I don't think Costas is going to dictate the terms or say where they should all sign. I think that'll be Giannis who makes that call. But yeah, I think like family, loyalty, and competitiveness and becoming a great player and winning is what's important to him. So the Bucks have done all they can do on the loyalty thing. I think they've tried to, you know, do basically everything that he's wanted to see within reason. I mean, Giannis gets attached to people like Jason Kidd, which sometimes you can't do anything about. But I think the winning would I don't want to say seal the deal because you never really know, but I think you'd get as good of a chance as you possibly could get, and I think it's a very, very good chance.
No, for sure. And speaking of winning a championship, do you think, I mean, Mike Budenholzer, especially with Cavs fans, I'm no exception to this, kind of rib Budenholzer as a coach. Do you think this, him winning a championship in Disney this year, especially given the circumstances, would finally cement his status as a top coach in the league? Because a lot of people call him a good coach, but they question some of his decision-making, his system and everything else. And I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of narratives going against Milwaukee heading into this situation that they could just put a lot of them to rest if they win a title. And do you think Budenholzer could lock up that top five coach spot if the Bucks do win the championship?
Yeah, I think so. This is one of the interesting Budenholzer things that I've been thinking a lot about lately is he's really new to having superstar players.
Yeah.
And you can say what you want about Chris, but he's been an elite distributor and not distributor, excuse me, an elite ball handling, ball dominant scorer this year. And he's a very, very good passer as well. I mean, obviously, there was last year. Bud's first year with a true star in Giannis. I think Chris was getting there. I think he was more of an all-star than he was. He's on a different level this year. He's gotten much better, much more comfortable. And I think there was a little bit of butting heads between mostly Chris, not Giannis, because Giannis was obviously going to be featured in some way. But between Chris and Bud of trying to figure out exactly what his role is. And at first, Bud, you know, didn't want him to deviate from the offense and take some of these shots. But we've seen more and more, like the Bucks run more pick and roll than ever, especially with the Chris and Giannis pick and roll that I've been yelling about. And they post up Brook Lopez more now on mismatches. That's something we've seen in the scrimmage games when we saw, you know, later in the regular season this year is like if Brook has a little guy, they just give him the ball. That's not always something they would do before, as obvious as it sounds. I mean, they played the system a lot more, especially, you know, it was glaringly obvious in the playoffs last year. They didn't really have, you know, when the system got junked up by an elite defense like the Raptors, the Bucks didn't really have a counterpunch.
Mm-hmm.
I think this year has been a big learning experience for Budenholzer. And I think, you know, people do criticize him, like you mentioned, for not getting it quicker. But think about it. I mean, in Atlanta, when they had the five all-stars and the five-person player of the month or whatever, you couldn't really just say, like, all right, we're just going to put the ball in Jeff Teague's hands. And you wouldn't have gotten 60 wins if they just did, like, Jeff Teague pick and roll. He didn't really have a choice if he wanted to maximize that particular roster. So I think it makes sense that going from San Antonio, which is, you know, systematic as well in a lot of aspects, it's not usually, like, a superstar just go and cook. It became that for a little bit with Kawhi, but I digress. To Atlanta, where it was like, how good can we be with Al Horford and Paul Millsap? Let's find out. They got pretty good, but never good enough. I don't think there's anything any coach could have really done to win that team a championship. Now in Milwaukee, this is a whole different situation, and you're still going to see elements of the system, but I think he's learning more that, you know, I don't have to coach the hell out of every possession. Sometimes I can just let my best two players go and beat their best two players. And I think it's very important that he learns this, that he is ready to do this in the postseason. And I have been a Budenholzer critic at times as well, but I don't think the book is shut yet. I think coaches learn like players do. And I agree with you. This could be quite the legacy rewriting playoffs for Mike Budenholzer.
No, I'm glad we're on the same page as that. And it's actually funny you mentioned Brook Lopez. And this is my last question before we wrap things up for you. I know you're a big, big Brook Lopez guy, even to the point where you think he's a defensive player of the year candidate. I want you to pitch to our listeners and to any Bucks listeners that are listening, how underrated is Brook Lopez in the grand scheme of the NBA on both ends of the floor for this Milwaukee team? Because you've convinced me, Ty, but Brook Lopez is criminally underrated as a player.
He is, and it's so difficult because obviously Giannis is a potential. He might end up being the MVP DPOY for the first time, I think, since Hakeem, and he would be deserving as well. My thing for Brook was, and the numbers do say Giannis is a little better.
Yeah.
I think Giannis is probably better, but I think it's like an MVP is not necessarily the best player. It's the most valuable, and maybe Giannis is most valuable on defense too, but the Brook case is – like they built the defense around Brook Lopez, essentially. That's what it is. I mean, Giannis gets to play super free safety a lot of the time because they let the perimeter players funnel everybody into Brook Lopez, and Brook Lopez will just wreck your offense. If you get funneled into Brook Lopez and you're not taking like a faraway floater or a pull-up mid-range jumper, which the Bucks are just fine with you taking, if you try to go to the rim, you're probably getting rejected. This dude gets absolutely scammed on his blocks numbers. I'm convinced he records more blocks than almost ever gets written down, but he also gets steals. He looks more spry than ever in the bubble, by the way. He looks tremendous. He's moving very, very well, but he just, like, he handles everything. And some have said, I've seen that, I might've been Max Carlin, forgive me if I have the wrong person, but that basically, like, Eric Bledsoe is even more important because he does this great perimeter screen work to get guys to Brook. Sure, Eric Bledsoe is important too. Personally, I think being at the actual center of the defense, anchoring the defense in a lot of ways, I think Brook is the most integral player on the regular season Bucks to their night in, night out defensive success. The way he maintains that paint, it lets Giannis take some plays off, because that's not really a Giannis thing, but you know, he doesn't have to worry about guarding the rim every single possession. He can pick and choose the times when he wants to do that, or when he wants to play, you know, face somebody up on the perimeter more, wherever he wants to get involved, he can, because Brook Lopez is there vigilantly, night in and night out, guarding that rim, blocking and deflecting shots, and rebounding really well. The Bucks are one of the best rebounding teams in the league because he's a great box-out guy, even if his individual rebounding numbers aren't that great. So, unselfish team player, very, very smart player, great teammate, and honestly, the anchor of the Bucks defense, believe it or not.
You know what? You just keep convincing me more and more, Ty. And if anyone at the NBA level is listening, let's give some Brook Lopez some love. Let's get some promos going for him. Let's, you know, him and his brother are a fun dynamic, and the Bucks are a fun team. I think people need to embrace how fun this Bucks squad is. But Ty, that's going to do it for us today. Before we go, can you tell the people at home where they can find you on social and everything? And if there's anything you want to plug, you know, a certain Patreon or something, feel free to use this time to do so.
You're really twisting my arm here. You can find me on all social medias at Ty Windisch, TiWindisch. That's my username or display name on all of them. So mostly Twitter and Instagram, and a little bit on Facebook is where I post. So follow me there. The Eurostep is the podcast. You can get that on every podcast platform of choice. That is GYRO step. Great Giannis pun there. And I do write about all things NBA on my Patreon. That is patreon.com/TyWindisch. Where I cover every single roster move, all the things going on in the bubble. I basically break down how some of these weird transactions work and write a lot of analysis and other stuff on there as well. It's a lot of fun. So come throw down $1 a month, $12 a year to get more than 100 posts and constantly growing. And also put Wes Matthews on your honorary All-NBA ballots, please. Or All-Defense ballots, please. He deserves it. That's the thing I'm caping for right now.
All right. You know what, Ty? You just keep convincing me more and more. And for real, though, if you have $1 to spare and $12 a year to spare, give it to Ty and his Patreon. It'll make you a better basketball fan because he gives smart, critical analysis. And that's it for this segment on the Bucks. Probably the presumptive favorite to win the NBA championship. And, you know, Ty maybe has me drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit after talking to him on a daily basis about his picking his brain on basketball stuff. But Chris and I will be back with more of Locked On Cavs Under the Bubble after this, and I hope you guys are enjoying this series, and as always, go Cavs. Boom.
Say it with me. Sports are back, baby. I know we've all been waiting for this day since March, and now I've only got one thing on my mind, and that's MyBookie. MyBookie is a home run, slam dunk, triple overtime, game-winning shot, all wrapped up into one. You love it, I love it, and you all should be happy to hear that you can start betting today. MyBookie has up-to-the-minute odds on your favorite teams, and with the start of Major League Baseball back now, there's never been an easier time to start playing. With MyBookie, you bet, you win, they pay. Feeling good about your team's chances this year? Be sure to check out MyBookie's World Series future bets. Nothing shows you believe in your squad like betting on them before the season even kicks into high gear. But why stop with baseball? Smart bettors are always looking towards the future, and in this case, that means basketball, which is back, hockey, which is back, football, we'll see. MyBookie is accepting bets on all your favorite NBA, NHL, and NFL games. There's never been a better time to start exploring the world of online sports betting. Join today, and MyBookie will match your deposit 100%, plus they'll toss you a free $10 MLB future wager. All you have to do is use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA when signing up. Remember, MyBookie, the terms are simple. You bet, you win, they pay. Promo code LOCKEDONNBA for a free $10 MLB future wager and 100% deposit match.
Joining me now is credentialed reporter for SB Nation's Nets Daily, Billy Reinhardt. Billy, how are you today?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me.
That's great to hear. I mean, is everything going okay with, do you live in New York?
I do live in New York. Yeah. Slowly getting through everything. I feel like New York's kind of in better shape than most places right now, actually. So, yeah, just kind of taking it day by day.
No, I totally get that. Just, I'm glad to hear you're staying safe and hopefully your family is as well. But again, like I mentioned, Billy is a credentialed reporter for the Brooklyn Nets. And Billy, I have to ask you, how do you think Brooklyn has looked under the bubble so far?
The first game wasn't too good against the Pelicans. They had a few guys out. Jamal Crawford still hasn't played a game for the Nets. He's expected to play on Friday when they start the season up against the Magic. Tyler Johnson was out that day. So they had a lot of moving parts, and the Pelicans really took care of them in that game. Caris LeVert really didn't have a great performance. But the last two have been somewhat encouraging. LeVert's looked really good, just scoring at will. He's really dominating from all three levels of the floor, really creative in the mid-range. So he looks like he's ready for a higher usage role. Some other performances, Tyler Johnson, he's actually looked really good across a couple games with the Nets, and they bought low on him. They paid him a four-year, $50 million contract a couple years ago. He was in Miami. Miami dumped him to Phoenix. He had some injuries in Phoenix. It didn't work out for him, but now the Nets get a chance to get a look at him on a minimum deal, see if he's someone that they might want to have on their team next season. So he's looked really good so far. Jared Allen, a consistent double-double threat. And then Rodion Skurups, he's been good as well. He's been playing a lot of stretch five because the Nets are just so shorthanded, and he's been shooting lights out from three, 8 of 12 so far. So there's some bright spots. I don't think this Nets team is going to be ultra competitive in this bubble experience just due to how many guys they have down, but you can take some positive takeaways so far.
No, I mean, like, yeah, I think you and I both agree on the fact that first off, having Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, who are obviously the long-term plan for this Nets squad, out for the entire season is tough. And then, but I do have to ask you this, like you talked about, like Tyler Johnson and Jared Allen and Rodion Skurups looking good. Is this like a good opportunity for role players with the Nets to just kind of, one, ingratiate themselves with the culture and the system that they're trying to develop, to maybe just make a long-term pitch, especially in Tyler Johnson's case, to be here next year when Brooklyn will likely be a serious contender?
Yeah, that's a good point. I tweeted something out somewhere earlier today. The way I view the Nets in the bubble, it's basically Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, and Joe Harris. And then everybody else is really fighting for a roster spot, probably as a third stringer for next year's team, which is expected to be a contender, obviously. So, I mean, LeVert has something to prove as well. He's trying to prove he's that third star. The Nets don't need to trade him out house, try and get a Bradley Beal or something like that. I think he's up to the task, but with him, it's always about injuries and consistency. So we'll see in terms of that. Jared Allen, he has to prove he's worthy of being on this team. Kyrie Irving didn't name him when he named all those players on the Nets. I think that was just a slip in Kyrie's mind and not going through the entire roster. But There's questions if Jared Allen is going to be a long-term piece here. He's going to be a free agent next summer, a restricted free agent. So he has something to prove. Joe Harris, he's a free agent this summer. I think his worth is kind of known for the Nets, and I'd expect him to be back. But a lot of these guys have something to prove. Tyler Johnson, as I mentioned, this might be his last real opportunity in the NBA. He's got to prove he can stick on with this team. I think the Nets have high hopes for him, as they did 4 years ago. So I think he's someone that could potentially see himself on the roster next year. And then you got a litany of guys from Kurucs to Janan Musa to Timothée Luwawu-Cabarrot, Justin Anderson, Lance Thomas, Jamal Crawford trying to prove he still comes back in the league. So maybe two to three of these guys can fight for a spot and get on this team next year as a third stringer and maybe play into a bigger role. But I think that's kind of the makeup of the roster right now.
I think that's a smart way to go about it. And I think the long-term plan is a good thing. But I have to ask you this. As currently constructed, like you said, Caris LeVert's trying to play his way into being considered the third star for the Nets. Do you think this Nets squad, if you had a big three of Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, and Caris LeVert, and then you have complimentary pieces like Jared Allen, DeAndre Jordan, Rodion Skurups, and Tyler Johnson, and everybody else that you've mentioned, do you think they have it what it takes to contend with Milwaukee, or are they still maybe a piece away to really push them over the edge?
The way I see it is this. I think the Nets have two options of how to improve this roster in the offseason. They could try and because I think from a talent standpoint, they have enough.
Yeah.
But you have to wonder if everything fits right together. They have a lot of ball handlers with Kyrie, Caris, Spencer, and then KD. A lot of guys that have the ball, which I think it can work. But is that the best way to maximize the resources on the roster? They could try and build this roster and gear it towards a Milwaukee, let's say, and really try and go out there and find a piece that can maybe guard Giannis well in a 7-game series, like maybe an Aaron Gordon type. They can try and swap Dinwiddie for him. They could do something like that. or they can try and put all their eggs in one basket and just try and be so overwhelming from a talent standpoint that they'd just be way too hard to deal with. And that's the Bradley Beal avenue. So they have multiple ways to go about this. I think they're going to do their due diligence on a Bradley Beal and shoot for the stars, because when you got three top 15-ish players on your team, history has proven in the NBA that that's a very hard team to beat. So I think it makes sense to look that way. I'm not sure Bradley Beal will be available this summer. I think Washington's going to look into seeing what they look like with John Wall back. Bradley Beal's an improved player. Can that click a little bit? They're only the ninth seed this year, so they could sell their fans on that. So I think Bradley Beal is going to be there at least for another half a season. So I don't think that's the avenue they'll take. And then from there, I'm not sure how many other true third star options are going to be available. So if you had to ask me right now, I think it's more likely than not that Caris LeVert is on this Nets team next year. I think the Nets really believe in him. KD and Kyrie believe in him. So I think he's going to get that opportunity. But then from there, they can tinker with the rest of the roster with a Dinwiddie type or a Jared Allen. Both were likely to be free agents next summer. So those guys can maybe be out the door to try and find some better fits with the roster. But there's so much fluidity. It really depends on who is available in the market.
No, absolutely. And actually, you and I talked about this on Twitter, and this is part of why I wanted to reach out, because we had such a good interaction with it. Like, do you think Kevin, like, I know you said they're going to try and shoot for Bradley Beal and go all in on that, but I'm getting indication from people who cover the team and just, you know, just reading the general scope of things in general, that the Wizards are going to try and run it back one last time with John and Brad. So Brad may not be available, but do you think Kevin Love is a realistic target? This is a Cavaliers podcast, so I feel like I should ask. Do you think that'd be more of a realistic target for Brooklyn? And how do you feel about his fit?
So again, a lot of that depends on something. There's like that's what I say with the Nets. It's so hard. As covering the team this year, it's been so hard to write about, analyze and project, because so much of it is projection and there's so much fluidity involved. So let's say the Nets, they do hire a Ty Lue, which he's been a rumored main candidate, although we haven't heard too much about them. They haven't started an interview process, obviously. But let's say they hired Ty Lue. Obviously, he has the familiarity with Kyrie Irving. At that point, I could see a Kevin Love move happening. And not because Kevin Love would be necessarily a move that would put the Nets over the top, but I don't think he would cost a whole lot given his contract situation, the Cavaliers standing as a franchise right now, that it might just make too much sense to bring on a player of his caliber that has experience. The thing with Kevin Love is this. I don't think the Nets would trade for Kevin Love while still having Jared Allen or DeAndre Jordan. Like, if they were trading for Kevin Love, I think Jared Allen's probably going to Cleveland or a third team, because at this point, I think Kevin Love is pretty much a center. I don't think you would see too many minutes with Love and Jordan together in a front court. Neither of them can really guard fours on the perimeter that well. So from that standpoint, a lot of people say the Nets need a four. I think they need more of a big athletic forward that can defend, like an Aaron Gordon type, more so than a true big like a Kevin Love. Or a lot of Nets fans want Serge Ibaka, and he'd be a great get in free agency for a mini mid-level. I don't think he's accepting that. But at the same time, Ibaka's had most of his success the last couple of years and a career resurgence with the Raptors playing center. So they kind of need more of an athletic forward, in my opinion. In terms of Love, say the Nets can pull off a trade with Jared Allen, Torian Prince, Garrett Temple, and maybe a pick. I'm not sure if the Cavs would accept. I think we were going back and forth on Twitter. You thought that they might. If they can do something
the offer you constructed, I think I told you I would drive Kevin Love to the airport because
I think it was something similar to that.
He tanked his value pretty hard this year in Cleveland.
Exactly. Yeah. For the Nets, it pretty much would be just matching contracts and maybe send Jared Allen as the one piece back to Cleveland. So, like, if they can do that with Prince, like, not touch Dinwiddie or LeVert, if they could do that with Prince, Allen, Temple, and, like, Timothée Luwawu-Cabarrot or something like that, like just to match contracts. I mean, it might make more sense in that case. You clear a couple roster spots. Brooklyn's going to be a place where a lot of veteran ring chasers are going to want to latch on, I believe, being it's a big city, an organization expected to contend. KD and Kyrie definitely have the respect of their peers. So I'd expect there to be a lot of veteran players that want to come on a minimum salary. So in that trade, you'd clear a couple roster spots. You consolidate your assets into a player who, while he has limitations and maybe he's not a four, he could start at the five for you, give you 25 minutes a game, split it with DeAndre Jordan, maybe in certain lineups play some four. He could be your game-closing five with KD at the four. I think KD, his defensive ability to protect the rim, be rangy on the back line of the defense, he can help Kevin Love. So I think in that case, if that, like, the way I view Kevin Love for the Nets, he would kind of be a last resort. If you're going into August and September and October, November nowadays, and they really couldn't find another avenue, like that's a trade they can come back to and say, you know, we're going to go with Kevin Love here. It wouldn't be my first option. But I think if you're caught with saying with Jared Allen, Torian Prince, and I guess Garrett Temple for matching salary purposes, or Kevin Love, I think Kevin Love makes more sense. So I don't think it's something that's going to happen, but if let's say Ty Lue gets here, it's something that could happen.
You actually are perfectly leading to my next question. You've mentioned Ty Lue a few times, and Jacques Vaughn currently is the interim coach for the Nets, and he's serving his role at that position in Orlando right now. Are you happy with the job Vaughn has done this year, or do you think the Nets are going to pursue a different candidate? And if so, who do you think they should hire?
You know what? It's been such a small sample size. Kenny Atkinson was fired the week prior to the league stopping. Well, it was mutually parted ways, but for all intents and purposes, fired. Jacques Vaughn had two games to coach. He won them both, one being in L.A. against the Lakers. So they were impressive performances, but how much can you really take from that? They've had three scrimmage games since. I know this. I know that the Nets really like their staff, the assistants that they have. They like Jacques Vaughn. But at the end of the day, it's going to come down to Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. Do they sign off on Jacques Vaughn? Did they really get rid of Kenny Atkinson, a guy who's putting work for the staff and shares a lot of similar principles to Jacques Vaughn? Are they going to get rid of Kenny Atkinson and all the work that he did just to get his assistant? I mean, that comes off as really scapegoating Kenny. But like I said, it's going to come down to Kyrie and Kevin, who they want as the head coach. I don't think Sean Marks is going to just go with anyone they say. Mm-hmm. Like, there's been a lot of rumors about Mark Jackson. I really cannot wrap my head around Sean Marks potentially signing off on that. It just seems to go against everything he stands for from a principal perspective and analytics in general, and just everything, the essence of what the Nets have been under Sean Marks. So I really can't see that happening, but who knows? If he does, that means Sean Marks just really stepped aside and said, you know what, KD, you're here. It's your team. You want Mark Jackson. You got him. That would tell us a lot. I think it's going to come down to Ty Lue and Jacques Vaughn, and I think Jacques Vaughn has a pretty good chance of sticking around. Ty Lue and Jacques Vaughn, and then my dream candidate, which I think there's more of a chance than people think, Greg Popovich. I think he's obviously the first option. He's kind of like the Bradley Beal in terms of the coaching standpoint. You got to shoot for the stars, see if there's any chance of that happening, and then from there you can drop down to the other possibilities like a Ty Lue or Jacques Vaughn. So I actually don't think the coach, who the Nets get as a coach, is going to affect that much. They can't mess it up, but for the most part, if you pick someone that's rather mediocre, I think they'll be okay. I think the star is going to run the team. You might want to make sure you get veteran influence in that locker room so that the locker room's in good shape. But I think for the most part, KD and Kyrie are going to want to play the way they want to play. You don't need a true X's and O's wizard to get this team to the promised land.
No, that makes absolute sense. And before we go, just let me ask you real quick, who do you think is going to win the first and possibly last Disney NBA title?
Ooh, it's a tough one. So I think a lot of people I see recently are thinking the Raptors are going to knock the Bucks off, or even some people say the Celtics or the Heat. I think the Bucks are representing the East. I think they've been the cream of the crop the entire season. People kind of get on Giannis for the way they performed in the playoffs last year. I think he's far and away the best player in the Eastern Conference right now. And that team's clicking on all cylinders. They have been all season. They look like they haven't missed a beat. So they're my pick in the East. Then you go to the West. I think the only three teams besides Milwaukee that could win a title are the Lakers, Clippers, and then my wild card's the Rockets, just because of the star power they have, the crazy way in which they play, that they can catch some teams off guard that are not comfortable with that. So I think they're a sleeper. And going back to last summer, I was saying that the Lakers and Clippers, they're toe and toe. I've kind of been on the Clippers side throughout all of this. I thought that Kawhi and PG was just a great duo. I love how they're built on the wings defensively. I think they have more depth than the Lakers do. When you look at LeBron and AD, there's not a player in the league I'd rather have than LeBron going into a playoff run. AD is the best second option in the league. And just historically, when LeBron has a really good second option with him, he doesn't really lose. And I kind of like some of the veteran pieces they've added beside him. I expect Danny Green to be better in the playoffs. KCP's been really good this year. Alex Caruso in short minutes has been solid. Deion Waiters and J.R. Smith, I actually think, can provide something for them. And then they're just so overwhelming from a size perspective. I don't know who's guarding Anthony Davis in a Clipper-Lakers series. I mean, you can put Marcus Morris on him. Trez Harrell's not guarding him. You can maybe try and get physical with him with Kawhi or PG and push him out to the perimeter, use your hands. But I don't love that matchup for the Clippers. And I think LeBron ultimately can outduel Kawhi. I also worry about how much Lou Williams can play in that series, for instance. Like, if they're going to be switching a lot of things, LeBron's just going to be seeking him out every time he's on the floor. And I'm not sure how much he could play, and that might hurt the scoring of the Clippers. So I've kind of changed my pick here. I think the Lakers, actually, in this bubble scenario where LeBron is just the ultimate calming influence, I guess, I think he's, at this point in his career, he's ready for any circumstance, and this is kind of an oddball experience here. I think the Lakers are going to get to the finals, and then from there, I'll take the Lakers and LeBron over the Bucks and Giannis. I think AD is one of the few fours that can guard Giannis from a physical standpoint, and that's where Giannis is most of his damage. Most of the teams in the league, they just can't match up with Giannis from a physical standpoint and size and speed aspect, whereas the Lakers have that answer. Anthony Davis could guard him, sit in the paint a little bit, and still get out on his jump shot. So I'm going to say Lakers over Bucks as of now, but we'll see what happens. Who really knows? This is a really unprecedented situation.
No, it really is, and you make a good argument. I had Ty Windisch on earlier, and you know, I didn't even ask the question. He like opened with saying like, "Oh no, it's going to be the Bucks." And then a lot of people are saying the Clippers, a lot of people are saying the Lakers, a lot of people are saying the Bucks. But I think that's just the safe pick between the three. But I think the Rockets are an interesting one as well. But that's going to do it for us today, Billy. Before we go, why don't you tell everyone where they can find you on social? And is there anything you want to give a quick plug?
Yeah, you guys can find me at Billy Reinhardt, BillyReinhardt. On Twitter, and I do my writing for Nets Daily covering the Brooklyn Nets. So while this bubble experience may not be the most intriguing for the Nets, hopefully next year you guys can tune in a little bit so you see what Kyrie's doing in Brooklyn.
Yep, sounds good. Thank you again, Billy, for coming on, and thanks everyone for listening and being part of this Locked On Cavs Under the Bubble experience. Chris and I will be back with more soon. Joining me now is Jack of all trades, master of all with iHeart, and the host of the Sly Hooper podcast, and more importantly, my good friend and Sixers analyst, Jordan Christmas. Jordan, thanks for joining me again. How are you today, man?
Doing good. Glad basketball's back so I can, you know, have something to plan my day around, because that's been kind of missing for the last few months. But ready to overreact to some Sixers scrimmages.
I was going to say, you can double dip a bit too, because you have done work with the Kings as well, so you get to enjoy conferences.
Oh yeah, it's just good to have all basketball back. I've just been watching scrimmages all weekend, so
it's been a good time. Yeah, for sure. Speaking of your Sixers though, how in your opinion have they looked under the bubble so far?
So I do want to preface everything that I say in this conversation with, these are just scrimmages, but with the whole lineup changes, and it seems like the coaching staff has had, 4 months to look at what worked and what didn't with the starting lineup and Al Horford, and which we will talk about later. I think it's looked really good, all things considered. This is the first time probably, since the Clippers game in February when Al Horford first was moved to the bench, where the roster and the construction of the roster made sense around the team's two best players. And it's had pretty good returns so far. They're playing Ben Simmons more at the elbow since moving to power forward. There's shooters around Embiid and Simmons, and guards, mainly Shake Milton, who can dribble, pass, and shoot, which are, I don't know about you, those are three important fundamental skills that you need in basketball. And Shea can do that at a passable level. And it's just something the Sixers haven't had in a while. So we mainly wanted to watch the scrimmages to see how the lineup changes would work, moving Shea to the point guard and moving Al Horford to the bench. And then Simmons slides down to the four. And I think we've seen pretty good returns so far. The defense is still really good, but the offense mainly has just flowed much more nicely and in a much more consistent manner than what we've seen in the past. So I think we've seen good returns so far. And again, these are scrimmages, but these signs point well as we start to head towards the seeding games and then eventually to the playoffs.
Well, this might be a bit of an overreaction. Like you said, it is scrimmages and you're trying to keep your expectations tempered, but Ben Simmons hit a quarter three with confidence, Jordan. What the heck? I am losing not my best joke with you.
Not only as a three with confidence, Ben Simmons he attempted a three with a defender. Honestly, the defender was really close to him on the first attempt. And we just wanted fans especially just wanted Ben Simmons to shoot open threes, but he took a three with a defender, you know, contesting, semi-contesting. He was running out of him, but that's like a quantum leap from what we were looking for with Simmons in terms of shooting. So, I mean, yeah, we don't want to overreact, but the fact that he took a three with a defender running at him and then later took another three after missing, which was another test we wanted to see. Is he going to keep shooting after he misses? It's a good sign. And I know he didn't take threes in yesterday's scrimmage against the Thunder, but he was spacing out to the corner more instead of floating around in the dunker spot. He was really making a concerted effort to space out to the three-point line. So I'm starting to buy, and I've been hurt before with past videos of, you know, Simmons shooting in the offseason and saying that he's going to shoot, but then never does shoot. I know we've been hurt by that in the past, but we are seeing a shift in a mindset that we haven't necessarily seen from Ben. So all signs are pointing towards him shooting more often. And then your Ben Simmons jokes will dissipate into the universe.
I'll find something new to rip on him about. I like Ben Simmons, the player, but the Sixers are kind of like a gift that keeps on giving. And speaking of, we talked about this a while ago when I had you on, and if you guys haven't listened, that episode of Jordan is one of my favorites I've ever done, just because he and I go way back and we just have really good chemistry. It was just a good time to talk hoops with a good friend. But you really touched on the fact and covered a lot the fact that this has been a tumultuous season for the Sixers. And I mean, Al Horford really seems to be the central figure of drawing the ire of everybody here. But do you think this extended time off and then, you know, kind of building camaraderie and chemistry where the Sixers are forced to hang out with each other more or less in Disney, do you think that's going to help them long term and maybe turn around their season and their title aspirations? Because right now, I believe they're the sixth seed off the top of my head. And
yep, sixth seed.
So that would, I mean, that's it's tough footing in the East considering who they'd have to play to get to the Eastern Finals and the NBA Finals. But do you think all this time off and just kind of forced team bonding is going to be beneficial to Philadelphia? And also, I mean, the fortune of good health as well.
I think definitely the time off helped. I think the bubble, the whole quarantine bubble and playing these games, I think does force chemistry, or not force chemistry, but you are being put together in a bubble with nothing but the 15 guys and the coaching staff for an extended period. So I imagine that this is going to, I mean, it can't hurt. I'm not so sure how much it'll help, but I think more than anything, just players have the opportunity to get healthy. Joel Embiid has been, again, dealing with injuries on and off during the season. He wasn't in the best condition. He even said before the season started that he really didn't get to do much basketball workouts per se over the summer because last season he had the knee tendonitis, which affected him in the playoffs. And as watching basketball as long as you and I have, we know that knee tendonitis is really just something that's just unfortunate and nagging. So I'm sure these 4 months have helped Joel Embiid. They've helped out Al Horford, who said he had been dealing with some nagging injuries. And remember, he had left knee issues in Boston before he signed over to Philadelphia. So I think the 4 months, more than anything, has helped players get healthy. The starting lineup really hasn't played that much together because people have been in and out of the lineup. More importantly, Ben Simmons had a really bad back injury that, where if the season didn't stop, who knows if he would have played in the playoffs had they continued as normal. But now we get Ben Simmons back and he looks better than ever. He looks like he's in great shape. The hounding defender that's going to earn him first team All-NBA defense this year. And I just think the 4 months has really benefited the Sixers in a lot more ways, but I'm sure the added being together all the time and stuff that could help more than I don't think it'll hurt at all. It'll just help a little, but by how much, but by how much, I'm not sure.
No, I get that. I guess, and I was kind of touching on this before, but if the playoffs started today, and now that I am firm on this, the Sixers would be the sixth seed in the Eastern Conference and have to play Boston in the first round. Would you rather them go up against Boston after Jason Tatum was exposed by Mikal Bridges yesterday, or would you rather have them slide a little bit, maybe face Toronto or Milwaukee, or leapfrog Indiana and play Jimmy in the Heat? I mean, like, it's a tough draw for Philly no matter who they play in the first round at this point.
Yeah, the season struggles really have put the Sixers in a less than advantageous position, I'd say. The Sixers did beat Boston in the regular season series 3-1, but three of those games were close, and Boston kind of destroyed Philly in the last matchup, and Boston's a really good team. I do feel comfortable facing Boston, though, because the X factor is always going to be Joel Embiid, and if he is, and we know all the qualifiers people will throw with Joel Embiid, if he's healthy and engaged, blah, blah, blah. There's just no one on Boston, I think, that can guard Embiid. And I do worry about the Celtics' plethora of wings, but we've had more defensive guards and wings in the past than what we had in the past. So I feel good about that matchup. Miami, I feel good about as well. Is Toronto and Milwaukee, obviously. Those are the big ones for me. Especially even after Kawhi left, it seems like the Sixers and the Raptors, that matchup just doesn't favor the Sixers at all. Marc Gasol just owns Joel Embiid. It's well documented. At least on the defensive side, Marc Gasol just knows how to play Embiid offensively.
even after the weight loss?
We'll see if the weight loss will have any impact, but I think Marc Gasol is just a savvy defender. He's one defensive player of the year. He knows where to be, and he knows how to, you know, deal with the Embiid types. Milwaukee, obviously, that's the overwhelming favorite in the conference, even though I think the Sixers have the most defenders that could slow down Giannis than I think any other team does in the league. Giannis is going to be the league MVP and the defensive player of the year. He is obviously going to be a tough matchup. But in terms of the Celtics, Heat, Pacers, I think I like the Sixers' chances, but when you get to the Raptors and the Bucks, which they're going to have to go through, they're going to have to start the play. Well, road and home games really don't matter at that point, but you're going through more of a difficult gauntlet when you start at the sixth seed, as opposed to being a four five matchup, or being the third seed in a 3-6 matchup. It just, the season drought, or the downturns in the season kind of put the Sixers in this unfortunate position.
No, I totally get that. And I mean, it's tough. I mean, if it was all 30 teams, I think having Cleveland there would just make me feel even worse about their situation overall.
But I do feel good about the lineup changes, though. It seems like the coaching staff watched film, obviously, over the 4 months, and they were like, look, this doesn't work. We can't have Al Horford, Ben Simmons, and Joel Embiid play together. And I know we might be short on time, but I do have one stat I wanted to throw out at you. And this is a stat that I've been tracking all season. But with all the talk of Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid not being great fits, even though I agree and disagree with some parts of that argument on both sides of the debate, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Al Horford in the same lineups have had an offensive rating, according to Cleaning the Glass, of 99.3 points per 100 possessions. That's literally 5 points worse than the worst offense in the NBA, which is the Golden State Warriors. And then without Al Horford on the court, but Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid on the court, their offensive rating jumps back to 116.6 points per 100 possessions. Now, the downside of that is the defense in those lineups is 100. They allow 111 points per 100 possessions. But I think that goes back again to Joel Embiid not actually being at his best this year. So I expect the defense to clean up a little bit. But it just goes to show you that having Al Horford, Ben Simmons, and Joel Embiid on the same court was untenable. And now that you insert Shake Milton, who has the outlines of a guard that can run pick and roll a little bit, can shoot off, he's a dead-eye shooter. He's proven that all the way since college. But someone who can attack a closeout, is long and tall, and he's not a complete sieve on defense. I think this lineup change facilitates Ben and Joe being able to play together and having the spacing to run their wonky two-man game with snug pick and rolls and high-low action and stuff like that. So the lineup change, I really am looking forward to seeing how this lineup change does in the playoffs, because it's getting more closer to when Ben and Joe were together in the first 2 years of their career, because the lineups and the roster just makes more sense, if I'm making it any clearer, I guess.
No, you really are. And I guess just one last question. I mean, you've really covered all your bases. I think Philadelphia is just, you know, going to try and make the most of the situation. I feel like you're giving me the impression of, and if they can make a run, that's great. But I feel like they're starting to make the steps in the right direction, and hopefully benching Al Horford and making him such an expensive bench option, it's something to laugh at, but it's definitely an option. But before we wrap things up here, who do you see winning the first and possibly last Disney NBA title?
I guess I'm going to go chalk, and I'm still going with my original pick, which would be, well, not my original pick because I had the Clippers and the Sixers, but I'm going Clippers Bucks. So I'm going extremely chalk here, and I'm probably going to have to go with the Clippers just because I think they could play any type of basketball. They could switch to any type of lineup, big, small, multiple ball handlers, multiple defensive guards and wings across the board. I just love the Clippers roster, and I think the 4 months will also benefit Paul George, who he still gets routinely underlooked as one of the best players in the league somehow, but I'm a Paul George fanboy, and I think the 4 months will do good for his shoulders that he had surgery on, and I just think a healthy Clippers team is just the best team in the NBA.
You know, I agree. It's tough to really pick. I think the Lakers, the Clippers, and the Bucks are the presumptive top three, and I think you can make a case for any of them. But that's going to do it for us today. And Jordan, before we go, tell everyone where they can find you on social. I know you are making a return to Twitter, much against your wishes. And you always plug anything that you've been working on. I watched your latest video on your channel, and it's awesome, and everyone else should check it out, but please plug anything that you've been working on.
Oh yeah, so my Twitter account is @Jordan_Xmas. You can follow me on my Sly Hooper Twitter, which is @SlyHooperX. My YouTube channel, Sly Hooper. Just did a very nerdy but very apt video of comparing the two best basketball anime, because it's two of my favorite things that I love, hoops and cartoons and anime. So check that out. You can also follow my Instagram at Sly Hooper X as well. And that's all I have to plug. Oh, the Sly Hooper podcast as well.
Yeah. Now, the Sly Hooper podcast is good fun, too. I was on it not too long ago, and we really riffed for a solid hour and a half just about everything. But no, everyone, give Jordan a follow. He's one of my closest friends. He and I have known each other for God knows how long at this point, but it all started with dunking on the Raptors, and now it's just me dunking on Ben Simmons. But it's just been a good time, and I'm glad basketball's back, and I'm glad you're able to come on. But everyone, thanks for listening, and Chris and I will be back more with this Locked On Cavs Under the Bubble project soon.